One of the spin-offs of the Springboks winning the Rugby World Cup in 2023 is that club rugby in the country is booming. Quietly, without fuss, and without much wider public or media attention, the numbers are climbing. They have done so for the last 4 or 5 months, and it's good that they're doing so now because we stand poised on the cusp of a club rugby season. Welcome to the Luke Alfred Show. I have 30 years of experience on the front lines of sports journalism, covering some of the biggest games in cricket, rugby, the FIFA World Cup, and even the Olympic Games. Come and join me as we learn about some of the greatest sports stories you've never heard. I'm Luke Alfred, and welcome to the show. South African club rugby has a protean durability at the best of times. This is true. Estimates suggest, for example, that the country possesses 150,000 players at approximately 1,500 clubs scattered across the land, making the South African club system the second largest in the world, behind France. All agree, however, that numbers probably went down before the COVID-19 pandemic hit in March 2020. They declined precipitously 15 months later when the quarantine was relaxed, with young players wondering why they bothered to lace up their boots. The book victory that heady October night in Paris changed all that. Now they couldn't wait for practice, because it meant they could smash the living daylights out of the tackle bag by pretending to be the Swartland assassin, Peter Steff du Toit. So bad did the club rugby crisis become that Wanderers in Johannesburg, one of the most storied clubs in the land and the oldest club in Johannesburg by 6 months, were close to closing down their rugby section in 2018. It was touch and go for a couple of years, but with the return of coach Neil Khalifi from Roodepoort, the ship was steered into calmer waters. Until 2 weeks ago, however, relegation for the club was still an option. In early March, 5 Wanderers sides played 5 teams from Randfontein in an eagerly awaited promotion-relegation clash between clubs. 12 points were on offer across the 5 fixtures, with the fixture between the respective clubs' senior sides being preferentially weighted and counting for 4 points, the other 4 fixtures counting for 2 points each. According to Wanderers coach Khalifi, Wanderers first 15 beat Randfontein first 15 25-18, and with 2 other wins in the 4 rubbers, they ensured they would stay up by the margin of 8 points to 4. Quote, "There's an excitement around," says Khalifi. "I'm seeing it in club rugby and I'm seeing it in the schools. In 2018, pre-COVID, we were probably down to 90 players at the Wanderers. Now we're back up, I'd say, to 135 or 140. The upsurge countrywide has come mainly from players in the 18 to 21 age group. They are keen to find their inner Cheslin or seer, keen to unleash the goose step, and keen to barrel downfield a la Jesse Creel. These young first-timers or returnees to club rugby aren't entirely sure what they can and cannot do. They still harbour the dream. Whether it's a vague dream or a dream in sharp relief, they're hoping to catch the eye of someone other than their mates and progress into the garden of the elect, where they will walk proud and tall. Brad Geimer, the chairman of Pirates Sports Club in Greenside, Johannesburg, talks unabashedly of, quote, unbelievable numbers. He attributes these solely to the inspiration provided by the Springboks' 1-point World Cup final victory over the All Blacks, as well as the long-running saga that saw the Boks scrape through the knockouts in 3 consecutive matches by a single point last year. 2,500 fans packed into Pirates that giddy final evening, which made it both a festive occasion and a fine night for the bar. But the night also provided unforeseen rewards down the line. Quote, "We're seeing a return to pre-COVID-19 numbers," says Geimer. "We've had 50 new registrations just this year. There are 230 members in the rugby club, and at the moment, we're running 5 men's sides and a women's team." Formed in Kimberley in 1886 and moving to their current location in Lionel Phillips Park in 1942, Pirates are an attractive proposition. they're well run and centrally located in Johannesburg's northwestern suburbs. Annual membership fees cost $650. For that, you get kit and a chance to train between 6 and 8 three times a week. Matches are on the weekend, and woe betide if, in a moment of ill-considered madness, you shout afterwards for the Stormers or the Bulls. At Pirates, you are in Lions country. Quote, "We like to communicate as much as possible with the players because everyone likes to know where they stand," says Geimer. "We take coaching seriously and we are proud of our club and the way we go about things." No stranger to alliteration, Geimer talks of the club and club rugby being, quote, "a personal passion point." And listening to him tell his and Pirates' story reinforces this very claim. As a younger man, he spent a year in New Zealand, playing at the Takapuna Rugby Club on the North Shore. After that, he spent several seasons playing for London Scottish. He says he didn't bring back everything he discovered, but two things were paramount: club culture and the involvement of old boys. Quote, "Culture is important," he says, "and it takes the form of things like post-match functions, where you can get to know the opposition and share around ideas. Old boys are also vital." Geimer realized, too, that not all rugby players can be Springboks, but this doesn't mean that they need to walk away from the sport. Increasing professionalism of the sport at younger and younger ages has the unintended consequence of telling a player in a variety of ways that he isn't good enough as he progresses through the system. For those who are told they aren't good enough, it's easy to believe they aren't good enough, and so rejection and self-rejection becomes a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy or feedback loop. It's something that can very easily get into your head. Club rugby addresses this. It gives players who have been deemed unworthy or simply not good enough at a young age another chance. As we know, those who have been given another chance sometimes make it by other means. And these left-field sagas often make for the best stories. Think of CJ Stunder, rejected by the Bulls, who went on to play 51 times for Ireland, once for the British and Irish Lions, not to mention making the late tackle that made Springbok fly half Pat Lambie's life very different to the one he might have envisaged. If Pirates are the portrait of a well-run and successful metropolitan club, Safgol United are the portrait of a well-run, successful club from the periphery. They come from Grabo in apple, pear and forestry country on the Botrefia and Caledon side of Sir Lowry's Pass in the Western Cape. Safgol is an acronym for the South African Forestry Company Limited, by the way. That's a bit of a mouthful, everyone agrees. So Safgol's 5,000 or 6,000 hardcore fans and the legions of floating voters around Grabo know them simply as Suffies. Like Pirates, Suffies had an impressive season in 2023. They won the Boerland Grand Challenge amongst one of their several regional trophies and celebrated with a trophy tour with a difference in an open-top truck normally used for carrying crates of apples and pears. Quote, "We wanted one of those red open-top tourist buses," says Dimitri Jacobs, who has been club chairman for 7 of the last 10 years. "The problem was that you need a permit for that to move it out of the greater Cape Town area, so we decided we were going to do our own tour on a truck. We wanted to do something that was very Grabo." Jacobs tells the story of a group of old-time forestry workers, or bosboers in Afrikaans, sitting around waiting for their food to cook in a poikie, a three-legged cast-iron pot excellent for slow-cooking stews, widely used in South Africa. As they were waiting, shooting the breeze, a child walked past. He still bore the scars of a knife attack. This upset the old-timers and, instead of simply talking about the prevalence of crime in their community, they decided to take action to take the area's youth off the streets. So Suffies was formed on the Lebanon farm outside of Grabo in 1998. Forestry workers provided the bulk of the club's inaugural membership. Given the club's founding myth, Their motto is significant. Quote, a child in sport is a child out of court, is how it goes. The club colours are the colours of everyday life in Grabo, black, white and green. Forgive me while I interrupt a sports story to tell you about the Luke Alfred Show Patreon. As you may know, being a writer is not the most lucrative career choice. Please consider making a small donation to keep the show going at patreon.com/theLukeAlfredShow. But for now, let's get back to the story. While Jacobs doesn't dispute the story of climbing club numbers in the post-World Cup period, he has a theory of his own, which runs at a slight angle to the prevailing narrative. Widespread streaming has increased awareness of club rugby tremendously. Watching numbers have skyrocketed, leading to a virtuous circle where those watching suddenly want to play or play again. The only disadvantage, as far as he can see, is that live attendances have been negatively affected. Fewer bums on seats is a consideration. Safis can make 50,000 rand from gate takings at home games. If that happens, it has a knock-on effect through the club ecosystem. Conversely, if attendances are down, it means that money flowing through the club slows to a trickle. Given that Safis are in Grabo and unemployment in the area is high, with forestry work declining and fruit export compromised by load shedding and Transnet inefficiencies, the bottom line is always there or thereabouts. While money might be in short supply, will and pride are not. Jacobs tells me that the club hired 12 buses to take supporters from Grabo to Saldanha on the west coast for a tournament last Easter. The club's 120 players have done the community proud and, in turn, they support them in numbers wherever they play. Although streaming has taken off in the Boland in the last few years, it is still in its infancy. Those advertisers who associate themselves with the three or four streaming companies tend to be happy with the mileage, while those who advertise with Safis are thrilled with the exposure that comes about via streaming. The streamers themselves charge a nominal subscription fee, so they are happy too. Television coverage is in short supply, whether this is on free-to-air, SABC or satellite, like SuperSport, so beaming the product to a wider constituency is a win-win for everyone, at least on the face of it. Whether free-to-air or satellite, South African TV stations have certainly been neglectful of club rugby to the point of disrespect in the last 5 years. The absence of the Gold Cup, the only national club tournament of any significance, didn't help matters because it wasn't played at all between March 2020 and September 2023. Finally, in September and October, after a period of 3.5 years, SA Rugby put on an abbreviated and slightly apologetic tournament that ran for 5 weeks. It was won by the Naka Bulls, a rebranded Oostlikers from Pretoria, in other words, who beat Durban's College Rovers in the final. SuperSport only televised the final, not the entire competition, and that was on a back channel, with the broadcast being marred by so-called technical problems and starting 30 minutes after kickoff. To add insult to injury, SuperSport missed the ceremony in which the trophy was awarded, because they cut away to adverts. As far as streaming is concerned, no guidelines exist as to who owns what. Boland Rugby have appointed a task team, of which Jacobs is a part, to look into the commercialization of streaming. For the time being, streamers can't charge users for a subscription, although Boland Rugby are allowing streaming to go ahead. Without saying what they are, Jacobs says he's proposed two models to the task team. One of them presumably involves a model in which the union, the clubs, and the streamers all get a slice of the pie. There is, however, a third way. Boland Rugby haven't exactly been proactive in cottoning on to the vast commercial opportunities of live streaming. The phenomenon has been going on for at least 2 years in the region, yet task teams and models are only coming up for discussion now. If the clubs were brave, and this is only an idea, mind you, They would cut the late reacting union out of the loop completely and do business with the streaming services directly. In the course of interviewing Club Rugby people for this podcast, it became obvious that grassroots administrators are cynical about both provincial unions and the national mother body. There is even talk in some parts of the country of sponsorship deals being negotiated for Club Rugby, but that money not percolating down to the very clubs for whom it was meant. Digital technology has provided the long-suffering clubs, so often the last to get anything meaningful in the past, with an opportunity to be architects of their own destiny. They can now negotiate what are, in effect, their own broadcast rights deals. Their unions will respond by banning them. But if a group of strong clubs form a breakaway, there is very little that a union can compel them to do to bring them back into the fold. Private streaming deals with selected high-quality service providers have the additional advantage of disintermediating the television stations. The broadcast of Club Rugby has been neglected contractually by both SuperSport and SA Rugby, which means that the clubs are free, if brave enough, to do as they please. Could the rise of digital and the general gutful attitude to administrators drive Club Rugby in the coming years in a completely different direction? Dwayne Heath, who is the architect of both the community and the Gold Cup when employed by SA Rugby, certainly thinks so. Heath doesn't talk in inflammatory terms, but senses that Club Rugby and its intersection with the digital age means that it's on the edge of something new and profound. Quote, "After years of being satisfied with crumbs, the clubs are rediscovering their power," he says. "It's the Wild West. These conversations really are the new frontier. As far as the boom in Club Rugby is concerned, we live in interesting times." He adds the corrective that the club's views seldom see further than the provincial boundary. A national perspective is rare. The question is how to harness the 150,000 Club Rugby players and the 1,500 clubs around the country in such a way that they use digital technology to enhance their product and make some money for themselves. They need it, and need it badly, because their provincial stipends are nothing more than a pittance. Welland would appear to hold the key because they are the cradle of rugby playing in the land. With 216 clubs across the province, and that's the official count, they have the most rugby-playing clubs in the country, in a geographical area that has needed to be subdivided into six because it's so large. It extends from Citrusdal in the north to Bredasdorp in the east, Saldanha in the west to Hermanus in the south. That's a big sweep of the country, so perhaps it's not surprising to hear Heath say that if the Boland were a country, it would be the ninth largest country in terms of rugby-playing numbers in the world. That's a great deal of rugby, a great deal of interest, and a great deal of commercial opportunity. And this from a province that gave us the slick Errol Tobias in the 1980s to the astonishingly brave, quick-stepping Kurt Lee Arensa of today. Up above this debate, at the top of the rugby pyramid, we are witness at the moment to a deal we hear about but know no details of. The equity deal that will see private offshore investors soon own a stake in South African rugby. For all the cloak and dagger secrecy, now is surely the time to attract investors. The Springboks are World Cup champions twice over. In the next World Cup, they might be knocked out in the quarterfinals. At that point, they are going to look a great deal less attractive as an investment proposition. There are murmurings at the bottom of the system too, where the clubs have become increasingly jaundiced about the administrators meant to serve them. Take but one example. I mentioned earlier in this podcast about a crucial promotion relegation contest between Wanderers and Randfontein in Gauteng, featuring five teams from each club, won by Wanderers at the beginning of the month. But after all the sound and fury, Randfontein were deemed too good to stay down, although they lost to Wanderers, who were fighting to stay up. Randfontein, it was decided, would also be promoted. Talk about two bites of the cherry. It's enough to make you kick the dog on the way to the kitchen to make yourself a soothing cup of tea. So, where do we find ourselves? Club rugby is at a crossroads in this country, although it is more accurate to say that it's at a long crossroads, because what pertains today, in early 2024, has basically been the status quo for any number of years. A new generation of young administrators, combined with the advantages of streaming via digital technology, means that the clubs could walk away from the ties that bind them. South African society is historically slow to see revolution as an option. This is true. But perhaps someone with savvy, dynamism, and the drive will take a punt, to use a rugby metaphor, on club rugby and the commercial opportunities that lie therein. For his part, he thinks that the Community Cup and the Gold Cup never really had the institutional support it deserved, although he has only praise for outgoing SA Rugby chief executive Yuri Roux, who was quick to jump at the Community Cup idea. Quote, "In 2017, we had matches starting at the same time in Windhoek, Harare and various places across South Africa," Heath says. "It was almost like an international tournament. The Zimbabwe players couldn't get enough of it. They loved coming down to Cape Town. We had traction, but no real support." The new generation of club administrators appear irritable with the endless hand-wringing and compromise that seems to characterize day-to-day sports politics in contemporary South Africa. They sense change is in the air, but aren't quite sure how best to approach this in a country that is too large to sit easily in the mind. In the meantime, club rugby grows, and that's no bad thing. After all, how cynical can one be of a system that has a Malmesbury-based club in the Boerland called Never Despair? Once upon a time, not too long ago, club rugby did seem to despair collectively. This is the case no longer. As a result of those long nights through the spring of 2023, the Springboks gave club rugby in this country a welcome shot in the arm. That's enough for us, and we should rejoice as the young men of the land don their jerseys, blink into the floodlights, and allow themselves to dream of what they might yet become, if only for a passing and a precious moment. If you enjoyed this episode of The Luke Alfred Show, please give me a 5-star rating. As an independent creator, this podcast is made possible through your support